doing?
No, just to know who is who, because otherwise. So who is Abhishek? Alkesh, Chandan,
yes.
Dhruv, Neha, Payas, Praneet,
yes.
I have the habit of picking out the first name, so I said yes. So who is that? Niranjan. So what's your first name? Yes or Niranjan? Niranjan. You're like me because Nagarjuna is my first name. So nobody knows what's my last name. So anyway, so Sandeep?
Yes.
Sarath?
Yes.
Saurabh is not present today. Vivek? So, let's continue our narratives. Any of you remember what is the take-home point of the last time? Were there any take-home points for you? So maybe there are several take-home points. So maybe speak one of you, and then each one can tell me what is the take-home point. So, what's your take-home point last time? We started with theories. Fine, but we should focus on ideas. People are important though, but most important is, what was the take-home idea last time?
Take-home?
Idea. Some, were there some ideas? Alright. So that's one of the take-home points last time, which is that every physical event must have a physical cause. It is to say, every phenomena should have an underlying cause, and that underlying cause must also be physical. And that, I told, leads to the modern notion of the law of conservation. You may not immediately be able to see the relationship between the two right away, but as you work out the theory of physics, as you work out the theory of science, you would see that this principle actually automatically seems like a kind of a principle. So that way, a lot of philosophers of science do not know whether the law of conservation actually is an empirical law or an assumption to begin with. Now, what do you mean by an assumption, and what do you mean by a hypothesis or a statement or a proposition? If you say something is an assumption, you do not have the burden to prove it. Okay, if you assume something, you don't have a burden to prove it. Having assumed that, and that is your zeroth point. So you start with the zeroth point, and then you derive the consequences. You work out what follows from that. So, in that sense, if the very first principle that Thales started with was indeed an assumption, then the statement that is called the law of conservation just happens to be an unfolding of that, a consequence of that. Anyway, so that we can continue to discuss. Before we get on to any particular detail for today, I wanted to tell you, because there are certain things that you have to do while you are doing this course. One of the things I told you is that you have to ask questions.
Yes.
And those questions will be graded.
Yes.
Which means that, and these questions can be given in various ways. You can go to the website and write them yourself, or you write it on a piece of paper and give it to me. Okay, so these questions can be handed over to me anytime, whenever we meet. Okay, you also have the choice of sending questions to me over email. So whichever means, paper, email, or on the website, but you do have to send the questions, and these questions will carry 20% of your grades, and 40% goes to what you write on the website. So which essentially means that your actual midsum and the end sum, the weightage of your midsum and end sum, will be not much, and therefore you have more job to do now than later. So the more alert you are in this course, the more marks you get. So you have to be continuously be active, thinking about the stuff. And when you register some question which you think is an important question, for which either I haven't answered or you haven't been able to find an answer, you can ask that question. So don't ask me questions like, for example, empirical questions. So any question is not what we're talking about. Questions that are relevant to what we're discussing in this class. So sometimes you may not yourself be able to find out whether this question is relevant or not. But still, if you have a question, do ask. Doesn't matter. Because asking question doesn't victimize you. Okay, we don't victimize just because you asked a stupid question or something like that. No question is stupid. All questions are interesting. So do ask questions. And again, do not think that if you ask large number of questions, you will get more marks. The question that you ask should be a qualitatively a good question. So that means, suppose if you just end up asking only 4 or 5 very good questions, you may still get marks for it. So I am not going to tell you right away what questions are good questions. We can have a discussion about some questions that you ask, and then in the process you would automatically understand on your own. Okay, having said that, let's get on to today's unfolding of the story. So we'll start where we left last time, and then we will be beginning with again the same person, Thales, because we haven't done anything except the rule that he has put upon everyone. And the rule we have discussed, the rule of the game is that we have to do things differently from everyone else. We means the people around him. So he just started a small school of thought and said that we are not going to do mythology. We're not going to do mythology. Why? Because mythology violates the principle that we just said some time ago. Because in mythology, people do ask questions, but for the answers, they do not adhere to the principle that the cause must be a physical thing as well. So in such cases, they do impute non-physical causes in mythology. That's not allowed. And therefore, you have to come with something really, really physical. And again, of course, we will also look at certain other aspects which come as we go ahead. So now that you have to explain, now what do you have to explain? Now the question is that what do you have to explain? What do you mean by phenomena? What things need explanation? A lot of things happen around the world. Usually, you seek explanation, not all the time, sometimes. So what kind of events generally need explanation? What kind of things generally need explanation? Speak a little loud.
Naturally
occurring events need explanation. Why? Usually, if things happen regularly, all the time, you generally don't seek explanation in the first instance. So, suppose if it rains all the time, every day, you may not even notice that rain exists. It's part of life. If there is sunshine every day and all the 24 hours, you would not even know that there is something called sunshine, because you would not even notice it. The reason why we do notice that sunshine exists is because of the day and night. There is a break of sunshine. Okay? And because of that break, people thought that we have to explain this. Or that what does it mean? What it means is essentially that there is a kind of a phenomena, there is some kind of a change. So what explains? So the focus of our discussion is going to be on change today. Why? Because you explain changes. The question of why and how are asked only for changes. And the rest of the questions would be what? Like, we do ask a lot of questions of them. So what is this, what is that would mean, you know, naming things essentially. But the moment there is some kind of a change, you have to find out why did that happen. But a lot of events people take for granted. In fact, most of the citizens in the world do also take day and night changes for granted. They don't worry about them. But there are some people who have more closer understanding of this transformation. And they also notice a lot of things. For example, like the duration of the day is shortening day by day. Or the duration of the night is shortening, whichever way one looks at. And the people who measure these events a little more closely can understand that there are certain changes taking place even in that. And those people would try to ask certain questions of why is it that the day is shortening. And then suddenly they realize that this shortening is also a regular feature. That is to say, every time around the same time of the year, you know, the days are shortening. So that kind of regularities have to be, first of all, looked at, should be experienced. Of course, most of them require very careful observations. We're not getting into those things because it is already taken for granted that observation was one of the most important tenets for science, for any kind of serious business. Now, why change is the focus? In fact, if you look at the history of science, we'll be discussing many of such things. Change as a phenomenon, as whatever it happens, in whichever domain it happens, first of all becomes a question that the science must attend to. Any change, whatever, wherever it happens, must be attended to by science. So that is what I'm trying to talk about it. What is the object of scientific inquiry? That is for everything. Like, you know, a biologist looks at life, physicist looks at matter and energy. You know, all those things everybody knows. So in that sense, for a physicist, what is the object of inquiry? Matter and energy, that's it. That's what every textbook says. So for a biologist, living life is the object of inquiry. But then if you put together all of science and you ask, what is the object of inquiry? Okay, so one way of answering that would be change. Or whatever that happens that needs explanation is the object of inquiry. And as we say today, that it is a change that needs explanation. If there is no change, you won't need any explanation. Then all that you need is description. Just describe the world as it were, and then you are happy. So the curiosity begins usually at the time when there is some kind of, some things don't happen the way you expect. So changes generally also are the reasons for your curiosity sometimes. What kind of changes do you think might have prompted this person Thales to start the explanation? Very regular things that we see every day. Take something like, there was a rain and then there was a puddle and there was water. Okay, that's what you see in the evening. And you wake up in the morning, you don't see the water anymore. The puddle no longer exists. So yesterday the children were playing in the puddle and today morning there was no water in the puddle. It's almost dried up. So the question now is, what happened to that water? Did water become earth? Or when water was dropping in the form of rain, did cloud become water? That means you have to now think in terms of a substance becoming another substance. So a cloud is a substance. And as you know, we have a very normal observation that whenever there is a cloud, it's going to rain, and then there was a cloud, and then it rained, and then the clouds disappeared. So from that, people think that the clouds actually don't disappear. The clouds transform into water, and therefore they disappear. That is one form of explanation that one can see. So which essentially means that possibly substances do undergo change. So that is one possibility, right? So if substances do undergo change, if water can become earth, if earth can become water, or a cloud can become water, you know, you have to have all kinds of transformations. So if that kind of transformations have to be found, then you may have to first of all say, then how many kinds of substances are there? And that is of course the one of the natural questions that people asked. So Thales also asked that kind of question. So what do you think was the question that he asked? So that is the other important node that we talk about, because change doesn't happen without a support. Because whenever something happens, some change happens, usually you say that something happened because some substance has changed, something has changed, some object has changed, and therefore you need a substance. So now the question is, what are the kinds of substances? Now from your own common sense, can you, I mean, of course, because you know all of you have done a lot of science already, so if I ask you, you will tell. So let me ask you anyway, how many kinds of substances are there?
Millions
of substances are there. So that's one question, that's one answer. Can anybody give me other answers? How many substances are there?
Millions, but there are solid, liquid, and gas.
He says millions, he accepts what his colleague said, but he says, but they're all reducible to solids, liquids, and gases. He says semi-solids are also there. Yes, add up to it if you want. So what is a basic substance? So that's one way of looking at it. Elements are the basic substances. So ultimately then, what is a substance then? You have only one thing called substance? Which is part of all elements? Now do they also have different things? So as you could see, that people do not know about elements to begin with, but you may think so, but it's not really the case. When Thales was beginning this whole game, he said that the whole world of whatever is accessible for him in his experience can be divided into four elements. He said there are four elements. So which are those four elements?
Water,
water, air,
fire,
all right. Now, which is odd man out here? Why? No, I said which is the odd man out of this four? It's not obvious. But something that is that's why it's really very interesting that Thales thought that it is very important to have all the four together as the four important elements. In fact, since we are doing history, we should also keep in mind that when people ask this question, Thales was not the only person who came to this answer. In almost all cultures, whether it was Indian, Chinese, Arabic or Greek, almost all basic cultures ask this question, and they almost always usually have the similar answers. In some cases, as in the case of in the Indian context, they have added one more aspect to it, and they added space or Akash. And then some people thought that we need to add something else other than this, and some people said it's not necessary, and that is usually you can either call it as spirit or you can call it as mind. So this is how different people constructed different ontologies in the past. Mind, Atma, or whatever you want to call it. Now if you read Indian ancient history of science, in the Indian model, this is what you see. So now I'm just introducing a small term, and that term I'll just put you here. I just want to introduce you that term. This is all called ontology. Sorry, again I misspelled it. Now, what is the meaning of ontology? We already have an example here. What substance exists in the world? What substance exists in the world? And how many kinds of things are there in the world? When you ask that question, you say that's an ontological question. So, this is not merely a question. I think just 2-3 days back there was a conference in BRC on foundations of quantum mechanics, and they were also asking what is the fundamental thing out there. So the question that people ask in the foundations of quantum mechanics is essentially, what is the ultimate substance? Could it be the quark, or could it be something else altogether? Some people think that even more basic than quarks would be something like strings. So how to construct the world? What is the most basic substance using which you can construct rest of the world? And that is basically the question that we are asking, and that's exactly what started with Thales to begin with. In any case, so just wanted to tell you that such questions are called ontological questions, and people who used to do this kind of ontological work in general are called metaphysicians. So Thales was also called a metaphysician. So people who do metaphysics means actually the physics about physics, that is about the whole world out there. All right. So now the question is that in what sense does this explain this? Does this ontology have any role to play in explaining the changes that happen in the world? They actually pertain to two questions that can be asked. So Thales asked two kinds of questions. The questions that Thales asked can be asked in the following way. I'll also, because there are actually the ontological questions, so I would like to put them as things. What or the stuff of the world. And what is change, or how things change from one another? These are the two important questions that are begin to ask. And in fact, if you look at it, even today we continue to ask only these two questions in the modern physics or modern science. So ultimately, so the very first questions were already, you know, put down. So in a sense, so Thales has not only started the game, he also set the rules of the game, and he also said what are the bones and the joints and the flesh of that game. So he has set out the whole body, as it were. So that's exactly the reason why a lot of people agree that the modern mind, the modern inquiring mind, with some order in that inquiry, begins with Thales. Let's get back to this question of the, which I just asked some time ago, which is, in what sense do we have to understand these issues, like water, air, fire, earth? Is that enough? Can't you distinguish different kinds of water? Can't you distinguish different kinds of air, different kinds of fire, and different kinds of earth? Does everything that happens can be reduced to these four elements? What I would of course do here is that I would remove this and this for the time being. Why? Because not because of any agreement or disagreement, but because that's not what Thales is talking about. So Thales is only talking about these four elements at the moment. Yes. Different kinds of fire. Tell me now, what do you think could be the meaning of different kinds of water for Thales?
Different liquids.
So don't think that Thales was very naive in its in his understanding of what is water. For him, water means liquid. So essentially, what he was saying, he's talking about the states of matter in the modern terminology, but that's exactly not what he meant. But he didn't look at it as states of matter. Today we call them as states of matter, but Thales did not say that they are states of matter. Thales said that they are elements. These are the basic elements. Why did he say that? That he said because you sometimes notice some solid substance, but then that solid substance sometimes has some character of being wet. Okay, you may find a solid substance, but it is wet, like a word earth, for example. So earth is wet. Now what does it mean? Or when you touch some stone, it's cold. But normally liquid is cold. But when you touch a stone, it is cold. There are two ways of saying. You can say, you can use the describe that in terms of heat and cold, hot and cold, but you can also say it is wet, or it is dry as well as wet. Now what happens is, in this course, in the whole discourse, you start describing the world in terms of this kind of qualities. So when Thales was doing it, Thales was doing them entirely on the basis of, he was trying to describe that each of them have certain primary properties, and then based on those properties, and he started talking about different kinds of qualities. So what are those primary qualities? So when people started talking about these primary qualities, the Greeks have a interesting tendency of thinking about qualities always in opposites: wet and dry, cold and hot, one and many, top and bottom, you know, all opposites. So then you have such kind of opposites to describe these substances. So that is how, what is being meant by explaining all the changes that are happening is, suppose if I drop this water on a dry earth, then what will happen to the dry earth? Earth will become wet. Now that, so that's a combination of two elements. Now it's possible to make earth hot or liquid hot, because you can boil water using fire, and then the cool liquid becomes hot. So that hotness actually came because, why is the water hot, or why is it boiling? Or it is boiling because it's a combination of two elements. What are those two elements? Being liquid, and the second one being hot, that is fire. So it's a combination of fire and water. Now if we actually start looking at it, he had answers for almost every event that is happening around him. And that is the one of the reasons why this is considered one of the most interesting models. If you understand what is model building, this is what is called model building, and that's what we do even today. The model building would mean that you propose a few basic elements and a few basic operations. What are the operations that he is talking about? What is the operation that this fellow is talking about? The basic operations, because you always need to have some basic operations. So let's also give a important thing, because this is also very important. What are the operations that Thales was talking about? Can you guess? So essentially the operation is, sorry, combination and separation, because again this operation is a reversible operation. So by using combinations and separations of the basic elements, so you have basic elements, you have basic operations. Now given these two things, what Thales would try to do is, he would try to explain everything around in the world without including anything else, without including anything mythological. He will try to explain everything. So therefore there is a problem solving activity now, which means that whenever you find some event, now you try to reduce everything to these four elements and then combination and separation. So now you have to do some kind of problem solving there, and this is the way how a model building is done. And that's basically the way how model building is done, whether it is past or today. The only thing that changes is, what are your ultimate building blocks and what are your basic operations. So whether you do doing it today in modern sense, whether you use strings or whether you use quarks, whether you use atoms or whether you use whatever you want to use, this is basically how the model building is done even today. So in that sense, Thales not only demonstrated a method of doing things, he also came out with the basic requirements. He came out with the basic requirements of what kind of things are required in order to do science. So you need some physical operations, you need some physical elements, and given these two assumptions, you will be able to work out the various stuff. I am not getting into the details of what are the various things that Thales kept on doing, because that those details you will always be able to get later on. We can actually, I think last time already I showed you the wiki page of Thales, so you can get all the details there. So I'm not standing here to read out those details for you again, so, but you are supposed to read those pages. So do read whatever that you can. Read a chapter about Thales from any book that you can get. If you don't get any book, just download the Wikipedia page about Thales and just try to understand as much as you can. And as I already said, when you are actually getting on to the details, what is more important is that your focus should be on what kind of model did Thales build to explain the world. Now the question is, at this point something very interesting happens in the intellectual history. So Thales proposed something, then what do you think people around are there? Usually what happens is, when some big seer comes and he says certain things and he's got a long beard and then, you know, a lot of hair and things like that, people would respect him and whatever he says is the word. And that's not what Thales encouraged. He encouraged his own students to ask questions, just as I am asking you to ask questions. That's what is called the intellectual tradition, which accepts criticism as part of the game itself. As a result, what happened? One of his own students, and his name is Anaximander. Anaximander is the second important person in our discourse. Anaximander. Now, what was the time he lived and all those things you can get from Anaximander's wiki page. So, I am not again going to spend time on that. Now, Anaximander was Thales' student, and Anaximander differed with his master. In what sense? It is not that he did not deny that the elements are not the four. He also accepted that earth, water, fire and all those things, these four are the real elements. That much he accepted. But then he says that he has an interesting idea. He said, look here, each of them must have some qualities. So what he said, let us start a journey from a substance that doesn't have any qualities. Is that possible? Why? Because these qualities that you see can belong to any of these substances. Right? Because these qualities can belong to any of these substances, he said that quality seems to be the most important thing than the substance itself. And therefore, if you really want to build a world view or build a ontology, he said, he disagreed with Thales and said that no, the qualities must be the way how to approach the whole problem. And therefore he said, we have to find out what is the root of all qualities. That is, he wanted to find out not what is the root of all substances, he wanted to find out what is the root of all qualities. And in the process, he proposed that there must be something like characterless substance. It's also called undifferentiated substance. Now, what would be an undifferentiated substance? An undifferentiated substance is a substance without any qualities. Something like the state of matter at the time of the Big Bang. Something which is not not differentiated. It's just a kind of a, you know, some kind of a super cool liquid or whatever. I mean, you don't know what it is. But so he was the first person to actually think of some substance. He called it Apeiron. So that was a Greek name, which you need not worry about it. Essentially, Apeiron means undifferentiated substance. So. And then from that Apeiron, as the qualities keep getting differentiated, the four basic elements get secreted out of it. So he used the term secretion. So secretion essentially means generation. So the generation of other substances come because they are getting differentiated from the primordial substance. And that's how he saw that there is a possibility to account for all the substances. And then there is a possibility that all the substances have some basic thing that is common to everything. So he saw that some kind of a continuity in all the substances. So he disagreed with this person. And Anaximander, incidentally, also happens to be the first person to have given the idea of evolution. So Anaximander is also called the person who gave the evolution of complex systems as a kind of idea. He said that all the things that you see are basically evolved out of something simple. So, as you can understand, the first basic thing was for him a pyron, and that is the undifferentiated substance. So from undifferentiated substance, all other complexities that you see in the world are basically an evolutionary history. So they all evolve from that particular point. And in that sense, of course, he is also given a lot of biological explanations about how life forms evolve from simple forms. And he was also the person who explained how the vertebrates and the human beings have all the fish as its ancestor. So he was also one of those people who actually proposed the idea of evolution. It's called the organic idea of evolution. So these are, of course, there are a number of ideas that Anaximander also been talking about.
So, yes. These ideas based on Shaw,
Well, essentially, see, observation is much more meticulous in these people. So, you see, one thing that you should see is that what do you mean by observation? Observation, of course, means, you know, not just having concrete experiences. Your ability to see what is common among other things. But you want to call it observation or an ability to abstract. So these people are, of course, observing because they were trying to explain things that are happening around them. And they were not trying to explain things that are not, that are invisible, that cannot be explained, because they already decided that let us not play the game of mythology. Okay, now we have to do something different, something like science. And therefore they have to do something. And therefore they were actually observing, they were looking at things around. They are not trying to work out things in a different way. So in a sense, they are certainly rooted in observations. So the kind of events for which they were trying to find explanations are based on these things. What's the time? So at around this time, there was another important candidate who comes, and that happens to be the student of Anaximander. And the student of Anaximander don't accept with Anaximander anymore. So have you seen that kind of classes any time? That each generation you get a different theory. And this guy is called Anaximander. I'm doing very quickly. Why? Because, you know, we have to come to modern period, at least up to 17th century. So, but I would be doing a lot of phases and exactly when new things are getting added, without getting into too many details of exactly, you know, what Anaximander said. That you'll be able to find out from the Wikipedia pages. So now, what is Anaximander going to talk about? Now, Anaximander introduces an important distinction in the way how he wanted to work out everything. What did he do? He says, exactly, so one of you asked this question, were they building all these theories only from observations? Now, what is it that you can observe? You can observe only what is apparent. You can observe only that appears, right? Just because Anaximander proposed an abstract hypothesis of apeiron, he was put out. How can something like that explain? Because the abstract things don't exist, because nobody has ever seen that undifferentiated substance. So is that undifferentiated substance something like mythology? So that is what puzzled this guy. And then what he said is something like this. He introduced a very important theme called apparent and real. And he says, what appears to you is not the real thing. The underlying reality is the real thing. So it's our job to find out what is the underlying thing. What does it mean? Basically means that what appears to you, that is your experience, is a mithya. Just an illusion.
So we see the blackboard is not here.
Blackboard may be there, but the underlying reality of that blackboard may not be what you think is black. In a sense, the same thing that is black may appear to someone else white. But some the underlying reality may not be different, because the same thing under a different kind of light conditions may certainly appear differently, because you can actually make the same substance emit different kind of radiation in a different kind of situation, and therefore he is focusing on the underlying reality. He said the underlying reality is something different. So he brings out this distinction called, you know, what is real and what is apparent. So we experience what? Appearances. Our experience gives you only appearances. So that is what we have access. And therefore what we have to do? We have to model a kind of a reality which can explain the appearances. So what is change? What is change? Change is apparent. What doesn't change is reality. So he brought out that kind of interesting discourse into the
change head. Is the only thing that will not change.
Pardon?
Change is the only thing, sir, that will not change. And change is the real thing.
Wonderful. So this guy says, change is the only thing that doesn't change. Here comes the Heraclitus of our class. That's our next hero. Heraclitus said exactly that. But we'll come to Heraclitus a little later. Okay? So now, what is this anaxia means? So, having said this, something that is apparent and something that is real, he also doesn't dismiss that there are four kinds of basic elements or substances in the world. That much is not his main problem. But he says that though these four things are there, but he says that all these four things must have something same in all of them. In order to think of something like an undifferentiated stuff being made of in all of them, there must be one such thing. So qualities must be emerging from somewhere else. And he proposed a very, very interesting idea. In fact, this still, I would still call it the stroke of masterful creativity. I mean, this is one of the most brilliant ideas and the most brilliant theories that has been proposed by Anaximander. Any of you know, Anaximenes, do any of you know what is this theory called? No? Anyway, I'll tell you what his theory is called. Theory of what? I don't want to tell you the theory. I want you to construct the theory. Right here in this class. Okay, I'll give you something. I'll give you either air or water, whatever you want, you take it. Or you don't want any of it, take whatever you want in the world as one substance. I'll give you one substance. Whatever that substance be. So whatever your favorite substance is. So suppose she says that her favorite substance is water, you take it. So Anaximenes would accept, not a problem. Okay, you want some other substance, okay, take it, not a problem. Pardon? Characterless substance, whatever, you want to take characterless substance, you take a characterless substance, I have no problem. What he says is, it really doesn't matter. What is the matter? He says, it doesn't really, it makes no sense. All that makes sense is that we have to find out a way how, given something, whatever that be, give me a thing, and then give me not one thing, but give me a population of those things. So what did I give you so far? I gave you a population of whatever that thing be. Okay? Now your job is to give me those four elements. So So think about it and come out with your own explanation. I gave you what? Anything that you like, and gave you that in plenty of quantity. That means they're in large number. Whatever thing I gave you is in large number. Now you have to build a liquid, earth, fire, I mean everything that you want. Fire, all those fire, water, air and earth. With that substance. All that I gave you, of course I gave you the whole infinite space. Yeah, I forgot to tell you. So take the infinite space. Take infinite number of those whatever that substance be, and build the world around. You must learn this art if you want to become a scientist, a particularly a theoretical scientist, theoretical physicist. Everybody does this. This is called modeling. I give you something primary and ask you to build everything. So don't think that history of science classes will not have any problems to solve. So I gave you a problem to solve. Solve it right away. So you got space, you got a large number of some substance. Two things. Okay, let's break. Have your 5 minutes, 10 minutes break, and when you come back with your answer. We'll stop there. So, don't take more than 10, 15 minutes? 15 minutes? Okay, so we reach here at 10 minutes to according to this clock.
Yes,
come at 10 to 12.
Yes.
And come back with the answer. You can do collaboratively also. Construct a collaborative theory. What is the coincidence?
It is this. Last year when you were taking a philosophy of science class,
mm-hmm.
you talked about theories and anaximander's the same day. That's 21st January.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What a regularity. That's really interesting.
Same day as last year. I had that in my mind, but